You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Hey, hey, good morning to you. Happy Hump Show, happy hump day. It's not quite like July 4th week, right? Where you had that built-in holiday and a lot of people took vacations. Nope, back to the grind, peeps. And so here we are. You get through this day and you start to cruise downhill toward the weekend. Oh, and for some of us, it's a payday Friday. It is for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. Just in time. It's always just in time. Thanks for all your questions for Ask Amy Anything. We've been jumping from sport to sport and from topic to topic. It's been one of those mixes, like a brown bag sort of an edition of Hump Show. But I like that kind of a topic or that kind of a show because we get to talk about a bunch of different things and we have a good time while we're doing it. To be perfectly honest, though, I have to say most of my time on Tuesday was spent reading a little more about the Thai cave rescue and looking at some of the maps. Have you all seen the maps of this cave complex? The Tham Luang Cave. That's the name of this cave in northern Thailand. Tham Luang Cave. But it's not like a cave that you might see in the movies, right? Where you walk in, maybe you climb down a couple of staircases, there's a big swimming area. It's not like that. This cave complex is miles and miles. And the boys were found 2.5 miles back from the entrance. I had not realized it was that far back until I started doing a little more research. And really, I love to look at maps. And so I was poring over maps on Tuesday. I was so happy that all 13 made it out of the cave alive. And if you didn't see my Twitter, if you're just waking up and you didn't see my Twitter on Tuesday night, I retweeted a picture of 4 Thai Navy SEALs who were the last ones to come out of the cave after all 12 soccer players and their coach were rescued. Awesome. They're badasses of the highest order. And they're smiling and they got their thumbs up. And can you imagine the adrenaline rush? That search and rescue operation took 2.5 weeks. And the Thai Navy SEALs, some British military personnel, former vets, divers, medical personnel, they worked around the clock for 2.5 weeks. First to find the boys 2.5 miles back, and then to figure out how to beat the floodwaters and get these kids and their coach out. 3 hours of swimming. From the ledge where the boys were found to the entrance. 3 hours. And yet they went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And it's not like the passage was straight and wide and dry the entire time. So I've seen some parts of the cave passageway, the route that they took to get back to the boys, that was walkable. And dry, though it had been raining and the floodwaters were constantly in danger of rising. They were pumping as much water as they could out of the caves. They were trying everything they could to keep the floodwaters from rising. But there is this one, well, there are two spots, one called a T-junction, where the cave complex literally takes a left-hand turn, tight, narrow spaces. And then there's another part of this cave that they had to go through. It's like a V shape, and it dips way down, and that whole passage was flooded. And I happened to see some videos of, I don't know if they were reporters or if they were actual divers, but essentially you had to squeeze and finagle and smush and reposition yourself to get through these narrow passageways. And in some cases, a really large human wouldn't foot through there. In fact, the divers themselves, we're talking about experienced Navy divers and Navy SEALs in many cases. And we know one man died just trying to get oxygen tanks back to this soccer team. But in this particular flooded passage, because it's so narrow and so uncomfortable, they actually couldn't wear their oxygen tanks. They had to roll the oxygen tanks in front of them. Because a human couldn't fit through the passage with his tank. I mean, we're talking about dangerous. And so all of these divers all the medical and rescue personnel. I mean, 2.5 weeks and all the boys are fine. Couple of lung infections. They've been quarantined a little bit. They're expecting a little bit of fever to flare up. Some of them are dehydrated, but they're safe. And 13 families get their loved ones back. And so a rescue operation that gripped the world, I really hope that these boys and their coach come to understand even a little bit of what it was like while they were in there. Millions of people across the globe waiting for any news and then celebrating every piece of great news when another boy was pulled out. Awesome. I mean, we're talking about heroes that did this search and rescue operation. So I was happy about that all day Tuesday, and I was looking at maps, and I couldn't wait to share some of the details. I would encourage you to look at the pictures and the maps because it'll blow you away how narrow and difficult and dangerous this operation was, and what a miracle it is that all 13 of them got out alive and relatively unscathed. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're inside the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. If you missed Ask Amy Anything, it'll be part of our podcast, of course, but we're all set up and ready to go with a video version. We've been promising you that, and I have to make sure that I deliver. It'll be our third annual video version of Ask Amy Anything. Usually it has nothing to do with sports, which is kind of the fun part. And if it does, it's something fairly obscure about my past or my memories in sports. So thanks as always for your questions, and we'll put that up on YouTube sometime in the next 24 hours once Isaac works his magic. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. You heard it with Brad Heller on the update at the top of the hour, mentioning the big football news. And by football, I mean football to the rest of the world. Ronaldo leaving Real Madrid after 9 seasons and a love letter to the fans in which he used the words fantastic and wonderful. And I mean, he wrote this really, really amazing letter to the fans of Real Madrid. An open letter in which he talks about his affection, his gratitude, his happiness, how marvelous it was, but he's going for a new challenge. And that's really the only reason he gives. Please understand, it's time that I want to begin a new stage of my life. And so here he is moving to Juventus in Serie A, the Serie A league. And they've won the last 7 league titles, and now they're adding Ronaldo, one of the best players in the world. So, okay, are they the Golden State Warriors of Serie A? But we're asking you because around the world, Ronaldo is, well, he's the man in the beautiful game. Which superstar changing teams creates a bigger splash? Is it Ronaldo or LeBron? You can find that poll on our Twitter here, I'll retweet, but it's on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, and also now on my Twitter, A-Law Radio. Just kind of one that came from the nether reaches of my brain because I wanted to see. A lot of people love to watch La Liga, love to watch the Euros. So it'll be interesting whether or not people will now flock, becoming fans of Juventus with Ronaldo, with his movement. Because there are bandwagon fans in other sports too. Adam Silver is constantly answering the question, how can the NBA fix this? How can the NBA make it so the Warriors can't win all 82 games and then sweep their way to a championship? I mean, I actually just had a guy send me a tweet about what's to prevent the Warriors from going 82-0. Really? I mean, come on. Talk about jumping the shark. But the question remains, is the NBA going to do anything? Should the NBA do anything to restore competitive balance? I feel like that's not even the right word. That word's misleading. There have been other dynasties in the past. And the core of that Golden State Warriors team, 3 of them were drafted and developed in-house. They're homegrown. I know Kevin Durant joined the team. I get it. but he's also taken less money than he could the last 2 years because he wants to be there and because he cares about his teammates. And Boogie Cousins, oh, come on. How many other teams had the opportunity to offer him a contract for a whole lot more money and didn't? He called Bob Myers and said, hey, can I come play on your team? Hey, pick me, pick me. It's just really brilliant front office management by Bob Myers and his team. And you can say whatever you want about the Warriors and how it's not fair. But the fact is, this was a really vulnerable season for them. They worked hard to get through their issues and still survive to the finals. Adam Silver was at the Board of Governors meeting and he did a press conference afterwards in which he kind of addressed this idea of the NBA's competitive balance or lack thereof.
I'm not here to say we have a problem, but and I love where the league is right now. But as I said earlier, I think we can create a better system. We learn from each successive deal. We try new things. We make predictions about how caps and exceptions will work. We have great economists who come in on our side of the table. The union does as well, but it's not a perfect science.
No, because human beings don't always operate the way the formulas say that they will. Guys get injured. Guys have career years. Then you have corporate synergy, which is the total is greater than the sum, the individual sum of the parts. And that's what the Warriors have. They're an incredible team. That's what makes them so good. They're willing to sacrifice personal egos, personal issues, personal goals, personal ideas and desires and dreams for the good of the team. That kind of stuff can't be measured by a formula. I feel like they're a gold standard, not something to be disbanded with some ridiculous rule about, oh, you can only have two all-stars on your team. I mean, stop it. Seriously, stop it. I do like the idea of potentially taking some of the loopholes and exceptions out of the salary cap. Not only is it far too complicated and convoluted, but Adam Silver's not kidding when he calls it a soft, soft salary cap. It really is. It's not quite baseball, but it's pretty darn close. Silver was also asked about the NBA potentially getting a cut of legalized sports betting. Now, this was his idea. He feels like if people are going to be able to bet on the NBA, that the league itself should benefit from it. And so that was also something the Board of Governors meetings addressed.
There's roughly 20 states in some stage of passing legalized sports betting. And so there was a state-by-state update on where those things stand and what the particular law will mean to the NBA. Related to that is the so-called integrity fee or royalty that the league has talked about. Frankly, it's not a place we've made a lot of progress.
I bet that was fun. A state-by-state update. Oh my gosh. They had to go state-by-state, 50 different states to give an update? Holy cow, I would have been really tempted to pull up my phone and start texting someone or just take a covert Snapchat video and send it to everyone I know. Oh, I would have been bored, but that's just me. So maybe you're bored with the show. That's good. The problem is when you're in a meeting like that, you can't get up and walk out. If the show is boring, you can certainly turn it off. All right, let's see. Coming up, the way that the Astros... Well, let me rephrase. The way the A's lost and the Indians lost on Tuesday, it's like the Bad News Bears. And a brand new owner introduced in the NFL. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Here's a 2-1. That's rounded up the middle, fielded by Simeon, goes home with it. The tag is not in time. The ball was dropped by Lucroy, and Reddick has touched the plate. And Rackley waited until Reddick touched the plate, and the Astros have tied it at 5. The 1-2. That's tapped weakly up the first baseline. It stays fair, and then the ball is dropped by Lucroy as he tried to tag. Now throws it away to first base. He threw it away to first. Tucker scores, and the Astros win it at the bottom of the 11th. Smith, 6-5. Are you kidding me?
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Of all the ways to lose, the Oakland A's pretty much had that covered in the 11th inning in Houston on Tuesday. I keep coming back to this because it's so improbable and unlikely, but also so comical. Not if you're the A's, I guess. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The calls from Robert Ford on the Astros Radio Network. The A's take a one-run lead in the top of the 11th, but they've got to be able to close it out in the bottom of the frame, and they do not do it. So the two plays at the plate that may haunt them for a while, I mean, they are 10 games above 500, but still, you're trying to catch up with two of the best teams in Major League Baseball in your division, and you give this one away. So Josh Reddick is on third, and the infield's playing in, okay? So they've repositioned, they're playing in. Tony Kemp hits a grounder to shortstop, and he's prepared, ready to make the throw home. Unfortunately, Jonathan Lucroy can't handle the throw home, so then Reddick slides in and ties the game with his run. All right, so there's one. There's one mess. Then Alex Bregman comes to the plate, and this one's comical just to start because he's already had two home runs in the game, and then in the 11th inning, he hits this little tapper. It was not a bunt, no. The ball starts to go foul and then somehow spins fair, right? So he doesn't run because he thinks the ball is going foul. Instead, it goes fair. By this point, he's standing there almost caught with his pants down. It's a figure of speech. And he's still holding his bat. And he's got no place to go because Lucroy's standing right in front of him with the ball. So what does he do? He backs up. He goes away from first base. He backs up. Lucroy then swipes at him with the ball and drops it.
Chance to put his pants on.
And there was time, actually. Bregman then takes off for first base. Because, you know, by this time, you might as well run. Takes the bat with him. Lucroy bobbles it. I think it may have hit the umpire. So it kind of bounces around back there. He does pick it up, though, and he has time to throw. He still has time to get Bregman and prevent the run from crossing the plate. Except when he makes the throw, he hits Bregman in the back of the head. I mean, think about all the things that had to go wrong there. The ball doesn't go foul. He misses when he tries to tag Bregman, who goes backwards. Then he drops the ball. Then it hits the ump. Then he picks it up. He still has time. And he makes a perfect throw right in the back of Bregman's helmet. I'm not laughing at Lucroy. Just the whole thing is so bizarre. And with that, the Astros walk off. When are you going to ever see two plays like that back-to-back at home plate in the bottom of the 11th? So that was interesting. Not quite as sad sap, though, as Terry Francona and Carl Wills playing a game of telephone from the dugout to the bullpen. And, you know, telephone. Things get lost in translation, right? Because it's not an actual telephone. Maybe they were using...
Sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Maybe they were using paper cups and a string because Terry Francona says OP and Carl Willis... Here's OT and sends the wrong guy out of the bullpen. And so Francona sees the wrong guy coming out of the bullpen and is like, what just happened? Or as Steph Curry would yell, oh my God, what just happened?
I immediately regret this decision.
I mean, maybe not so many nicknames. OP and OT do sound a lot alike. And the reason that OT wasn't supposed to be pitching is because he had pitched, I think, three of the last four games, and so he needed the night to rest. He wasn't really supposed to be available. And poor Trevor Bauer, maybe he's the guy who's the saddest sap of the week because he pitches, if I'm not mistaken, it was shutout, 12 innings of shutout. I mean, sorry, 8 innings of shutout ball with 12 strikeouts. I mean, he was on fire. No blisters for him. And then the bullpen comes in, and the bullpen is horrific anyway, even when you do get the right guys out of the bullpen. OP, OT, oh dear. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for finding me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. This weekend, the PGA Tour heads to TPC Deer Run in the Quad Cities community of Silvis, Illinois. I wonder if that's near where I was born. I don't actually know. Bryson DeChambeau defends his title and with a win could become the FedEx points leader, FedEx Cup points leader. The John Deere. Are you whistling?
That Bryson DeChambeau having that possibility this weekend.
Oh, well, just come on in and make yourself at home then. The John Deere Classic this weekend on CBS. I'm not going to ask you a list this morning. But
thank goodness.
Did you see the story? Oh, please. You can get out of your comfort zone a little bit. Don't be such a pansy. Did you see the story about Kevin Durant going after a young Instagram user yesterday?
No, I didn't, thankfully.
Apparently, it's a kid. Like, it's not even, and KD just made him famous. So he was identified as a young Instagram user, not, you know, like you or me. I'll put me in that category, too. And apparently so I'll just kind of set the scene for you. It's the picture of KD, Kawhi, and Anthony Davis. The three of them, elite two-way players, but this young Instagrammer says they lack playmaking and leadership deficiencies. Somehow it gets to KD's attention. And because this kid then posts screenshots of his conversations with KD, because of course he does, he's media savvy at like 12 years old or something. Durant apparently insulted him at first, calling him a knockoff Stephen A and telling him to clean his dorm room.
I mean, hasn't Kevin learned his lesson?
Seriously, does he not have better things to do? He calls him a knockoff Stephen A and then tells him to clean his dorm room. And the two go back and forth. And I guess the kid refuses to back down, and KD's just ticked about it.
And he's just a kid? Like, doesn't even have, like, an NBA blog or anything? He's like, he's literally just a person.
He's just a kid.
Dude. I mean, come on, guys.
I mean, you've got two championships and two NBA Finals MVPs and a whole lot of money. What, man? Why are you on vacation? What are you doing on Instagram talking to some stupid kid?
And like, is he in Vegas like every other NBA player? Go to a club. Go to a casino. Do something fun.
Go on a date, man.
Leave the internet alone.
Seriously, don't read the internet. Oh, my gosh. It's not even his burner account. It's the regular KD.
It meant to be. Oops.
Tells him to clean his dorm room.
That's a good line. No need to mention Stephen A, but the dorm room one's fine.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, he actually gets mad about this stuff. Just, it's not worth it. You can't win.
I would,
win.
Though.
What?
I would be. I'm sensitive. I would have to respond. But
come
eventually
on.
I would know better.
Here's the thing I can't get. How does KD even see this crap? He's got millions of followers and people who respond to him every single day. How in the world does he pick out the one guy?
I don't know. Is it a chance? They just, like, the one time. People clearly search their name, not their Twitter handle. They just when their name pops up. And maybe by chance he saw this one, the picture caught his eye.
Okay, so honest question. Do you search your name?
No.
I don't either. I've never once done it. I don't want to see what idiotic things people are posting.
But it's obvious when things like this happen that people are, because if you're not tagging it, yet you respond to it, it means that you're searching for your name.
Right, so, unless someone else sent it to you. That happens to me sometimes.
Sure,
people
yes.
don't put me in a tweet, but somebody else will then send it to
me.
Yeah, so still, it's a waste of time. You cannot win this stuff, and all you do is end up looking like a fool.
Yeah, although the dorm room line is pretty good. It's growing on me.
Oh, my gosh, you're going to use it on Twitter, aren't you?
No, I don't know. No one cares enough to be mean to me. So I don't.
Are you serious? No one trolls you ever? Not even when you host a show?
I mean, not in a way that warrants me saying clean your dorm room.
You live a charmed life. Maybe you're perfect.
No, I'm not. I'm unimportant. I think that's the way to go.
That's not true.
I mean, in this particular instance,
so
it is.
If you don't get trolls, that means you're just irrelevant.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I know I wouldn't welcome. I don't want them, but I think it means something if people are taking time out of their day to mess with you.
I'm gonna set up a new account and troll you just so you feel like you've made it in this business.
You'll be my one and only.
If you like, you can have all of my trolls.
Do you have a dorm room to clean? You don't, right?
No.
All right. I'll get a new line.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Every morning is better when it starts with a little Eddie Money. My gosh, this takes me back. This was some of the music my mom didn't really want me to listen to when I was a kid, but I'd love to sneak me some Eddie money and then sing at the top of my lungs with my hairbrush. Just like that, actually. It was just that good. Maybe the next time I need to cover a song, I'll cover Eddie Money.
That's a good idea.
I should never promise that I'll ever cover a song again because I was so scared when I had to cover the Billy Joel song for 20,000 likes on our Facebook page that it took me 2 months to get up my courage to pay off on that promise that I made. But Isaac and I, oh my gosh, Chris, you missed this. Isaac and I went into a studio for a couple of hours and kept practicing and practicing. And I had to listen to it over and over and over again. And then during the first hour of a show one night, we got in there. We were determined every single commercial break, we were going to keep working on it until we felt like it was good enough. And we got done. We go into the studio during this particular commercial break. And I did it. And we turned off the mic. And we both went, yeah! Like, that was it. Okay, we just did it. But it only took 2 months and so much stress. So maybe I shouldn't talk about covering another song ever again.
VH1's Behind the Music with Amy Lawrence.
The rap, however, that was original. Have you heard the rap?
I have not.
Oh, huh. Poor Chris. He has so much to learn. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Let me clear my throat.
Wait. Without the music? You're going to let him hear the part without the music?
Later this week, we'll play the open.
Okay, great. Oh, Chris, buckle up. The things that you have missed, my friend. We got to catch you up. A crash course on the idiocy of Amy Lawrence. Actually, the girl who doesn't care how stupid she looks or sounds, as long as it makes people laugh, that I feel like is a worthy cause.
Anything for the show.
Well, remember, it's Ask Amy Anything, sort of. Remember that. All right, so here we go. 855-212-4227, our toll-free line brought to you by Geico with some great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. The Carolina Panthers have a new owner. Now, you know his name. It's not as though he's a stranger to the NFL or that it's been some secret. David Tepper did his first official press conference, though, on Tuesday.
And it's a new day for this organization, and hopefully we'll have bigger and better things to come, including Super Bowl championships in the future. I like to have an open environment, one big family environment. Where everybody feels safe like a family. And that means you can come up and talk to people, and there's going to be, just openness on all sides of this organization, on both the football side and the business side.
David Tepper, previously a minority owner with the Pittsburgh Steelers, now becomes one of the 32 owners in the NFL that are movers and shakers and very often draw the ire of players and of fans, though Roger Goodell generally is deflecting a lot of that emotion. So Tepper, the newest member of this fraternity. And earlier on the show, we had a chance to check in with one of our talk show hosts who is in Charlotte at our affiliate WFNZ. He is Kyle Bailey, and he's partnered with Frank Garcia, who's been on the show a bunch, a former Panthers offensive lineman. And we asked Kyle a bunch of things. He's part of the pregame for the Panthers on WFNZ, and he also does pre and post for the Hornets. And we've had two pretty big stories regarding both the Panthers and the Hornets. So I wanted to give you a snippet of that for those of you who are just waking up on this Wednesday morning. I started out by asking him, what's actually going to change under the new ownership with the Carolina Panthers?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I think a lot is going to change, and a lot of it's going to happen over an extended period of time. I would say in the immediate future, you're going to see a change in culture. David Tepper talked quite a bit about that today and, sort of distancing himself from the Jerry Richardson era, not only in time and behavior, but he didn't want to talk about it. There were some questions that I thought kind of belabored the point a little bit, but it did keep coming up, and he showed no interest in talking about it. He was respectful, but I think that's the first thing. I think they have facilities, things planned on the horizon for a new practice facility, possibly moving the headquarters down to the actual state line, which is about 10 minutes south of Charlotte here. So, there's that and a handful of other things, but I think he's going to probably dip his toes in the water and kind of move slowly as he still has to talk to the governors of both states and the mayor. And I think this is going to be kind of a feeling out period.
How much do you think it affects the players or fans on a daily basis once we get into football season that there's a brand new owner?
You know, I think, again, a good question, and it's one that we talk about here in Charlotte quite a bit, because at the end of the day, you know, the average fan, how much does he or she really care about the owner of the team, right? I mean, what ultimately matters? Is it entertaining, and do they win? If those two things are applicable, then no one really cares what the guy upstairs pushing all the buttons is doing. And I think that's going to be the case here. Although, again, there is such a stark contrast between Jerry Richardson, the old Southern gentleman that, you know, those of us down here grew up just kind of knowing and understanding. And now you've got a guy from Western Pennsylvania who, you know, has the profile and the background that he has, and he's going to be very outspoken, and he's a guy who probably politically doesn't land in the same zip code as Jerry Richardson. So, you know, it's going to come as a shock, I think, to some people when you juxtapose that to Jerry Richardson.
Mm. Kyle Bailey is from our Charlotte affiliate, WFNZ, co-host of Garcia and Bailey in the Afternoons, and also on the Panthers pregame show. And after the new owner was introduced, he had a chance to sit there and listen to him and some of his comments. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. So how big is this story in relation to Tony Parker joining the Charlotte Hornets, which blew me away? Maybe it didn't surprise anybody else, but it blew me away.
You know, that was such, you know, it was a Friday show late last week, and, you know, we're having fun, but there's not a ton going on, and that got dropped in our laps, and I was fascinated by this, because you've got a guy who's a four-time NBA champion, six-time All-Star, played on one of the great dynasties in the history of the league, and he's leaving that situation. The Spurs wanted him back, by the way, as you know, and he's leaving that situation to come to Charlotte and to play for his old assistant, James Borrego, who spent 10 years, you know, on Pop's bench. And, you know, it's obvious what they're doing in Charlotte. They want to build a culture. They're laying the foundation of that. Tony Parker can help him do that. I actually had James Borrego on the show here in Charlotte today, and, you know, I asked him that question, and he confirmed it. Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, look, Tony might be 36, and he might not have a ton left in the tank, and he did miss 27 games last year, but, you know, they still think he can play. They really just they want him to back up Kemba Walker and to provide some mentorship and guidance for some young guys like Malik Monk and Miles Bridges and, you know, Dwayne Bacon and Devontae Graham. So it was a shock. I did not think that he would ultimately choose Charlotte, but he did. And I'm excited to cover a guy who I think is one of the all-time, you know, great point guards of our generation.
The Hornets were only 7 games out of a playoff spot last year, but they were 10 games below 500, which, of course, LeBron has nothing to do with. Michael Jordan is the man in basketball. He always has been, but he's, you know, farther and farther removed from that playing career. In fact, I have people who listen to my show who've never seen him play, and I feel so sorry for those people. But still, it's not as though everyone is still in awe of Michael Jordan. So how much patience is there when it comes to this team? Or are you talking about a market where it really doesn't matter if they win?
Well, no. See, that's what's interesting about this, because, you know, Michael Jordan might be the greatest of all time on the court, and in my eyes, he is. You know, but at the same time, he may be the polar opposite of that when it comes to ownership, at least in the minds of a lot of people. You know, the Charlotte Hornets fan base, I'll tell you what, as beleaguered as they are, and as rough as things have been at times, they will support a winner. They want a winner. I'm in that arena, you know, 41 times a year, and you know, you can see it. It's kind of brewing there under the surface. And the fact that this organization has not won a playoff series since 2002 is, you know, it's downright criminal to a lot of people. And, you know, people are upset with Michael for that and, you know, wondering when something's going to change. And they're hoping that the Mitch Kupchak, James Borrego era is the time for that change. And, you know, there's not a lot of patience with some people for Michael Jordan anymore, but, you know, we'll see where it goes. It's not the attraction that some people thought it would be. The free agents would just want to flock to go play for Michael Jordan. It hasn't really worked out that way. They have to draft well and develop here, and that's an area where they've not done well. They've missed on too many lottery picks, and that's got to change.
Kyle Bailey from WFNZ in Charlotte. Good stuff. Just a smattering of his responses, and so you can hear the rest of it on our podcast, AfterHoursAmyLawrence.com. But he's part of the afternoon show in our Charlotte affiliate. WFNZ also does pregame for the Panthers and pre and post for the Hornets. So good to pick his brain a little bit. And I think right now it's calm and it's quiet in July, but it is going to be interesting to see what changes. Are there new facilities that the Panthers get? Do they move locations a little bit. You know, that statue's not coming down. By the way, it's fascinating what Kyle had to say about the contractual obligation to leave the Jerry Richardson statue up outside the stadium. So good stuff. I'd encourage you to check out that interview again on our podcast. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. A-Law Radio is where you can find me on Twitter and also on our Facebook page. There are always questions that come in after the fact for Ask Amy Anything. And so we have a system. We know that some of you are stragglers and procrastinators, or that you don't think about sending a question until you hear us actually doing the questions. And so we keep them and we use them. But I got to tell you, the questions for the video version of Ask Amy Anything, we've recorded half of it already. Some of those came from the mind of producer Chris. They were tough questions.
Good talk.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't call it that until you actually hear it and see what happens. What did you think? First half of our video version of Ask Amy Anything. Can Isaac match the questions, the level of creative questions that you have thrown out there?
If my questions were good, your answers were better.
Wow. I'm telling you, Isaac, he is coming for your position as favored producer. He is coming after you, man.
Blizzards?
Those are really good. Got no answer for that. All right, do I owe you anything else? Are we all good?
Geico, pay the lizard.
CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line. I just did this like 10 minutes ago. We'll do it again. 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. With a quick way you can save money, switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Bada bing, bada boom. Okay, so you'll see it very soon, the video version of Ask Amy Anything. And we're back tonight for our fourth show of the work week, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!